You can see my award-winning climate comedy show Spoilers at a festival near you, provided you live near or are going to McCunclith or Wells comedy festivals. More dates added soon near you, conceivably, who knows what might happen.
And if you are at Mac, come and see ComCom Redacted live at 4 p.m. on the Saturday.
Go to stuartgoldsmith.com and click the very attractive banner image to find out more.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the show. This is Stuart Goldsmith. Today I'm talking to Ismo Laikola. He's a stand-up comedian from Finland. He absolutely rinsed a gala performance I saw, I can't remember what they called it. It was at the Montreal Just for Laughs Comedy Festival a couple of years ago. And there was a very strong lineup of international acts. And Ismo absolutely burnt the place down. He was so good in just a sort of tiny 7-minute gala spot, and he's got an incredible and a really unusual attitude on stage, an unusual sense of humour, and I think what he really excels in, and certainly did that night, and when I saw him more recently at the Edinburgh Festival, he's really expert at winning over an audience to his very strange sense of humour. Yeah, I think that's it. I wasn't sure what I was going to say there, and I think it's exactly that. He's very, very funny, and has a really pleasing accent to listen to. So I hope you enjoy this interview with one of, not the biggest comic in Finland, but maybe the second biggest, what does he say? The second biggest, but the biggest guy doesn't work in English. This is Ismo Laikola. I saw you at Just for Laughs, not this year, the previous year, 2017.
Yeah.
In the, what was the name of the gala you did? Was
it the like Sugar Sammy?
It was the Sugar Sammy gala, yeah, that was it. Yeah. It was like international.
Yeah.
Via Das was on the bill. Who else was on the bill with you?
Michael Mittermeier. Yeah.
And, it was a proper, like, I don't know if they called it the International Gala, but it was like the comedians from around the world.
Oh, yeah, like everybody was from a country.
From a country, yeah.
Other than any country near there.
And you wiped the floor with that gig. You destroyed, right?
Well, you could use
you
those...
You destroyed it, Mo.
Use those professional terms.
Yeah. It was. How did that feel to you? Did that feel like a particularly memorable gig, or is that like, oh, that's just one of my international galas where I do well?
No, it was like, yeah, it was insane. Like, especially like I did two, and especially there were two of the exact same gala. So especially the first one, like, both were great, but the first one was like the, like it was like I got like a standing ovation in the, like. I was like comedian number 4.
Yeah.
And
you weren't famous there. Some of those guys were famous.
Yeah, yeah. Like, yeah, definitely. I'm famous in Finland, but that's pretty much it. So yeah, definitely. And that, I was really kind of nervous before it, of course. Like, I think that was my first time in Canada.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure it was. So the first time I was in America, first gig in America, I won the funniest person in the world.
Who is running the funniest person? It's
Laugh
in
Factory.
Cleveland, Ohio.
Okay, yeah, it was Laugh Factory in LA. So, the first ever gig I did in Canada, that was a TV gala that went like extremely, like too well.
So give me some background on, you're famous in Finland. How long have you been performing? I don't know. Let's try and put you in the context for people who don't know you.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, which would be most people, of course. I started 2002. So that's like 16 years ago, I guess. in Finnish, of course, in, mm-hmm. in Finland, and like I got on Finnish TV 2003, so it happened kind of quick.
How many comedians were working in Finland professionally, like full time comedians?
Not many.
Like 10, like 100? What do we mean?
Like 10. Okay. like maybe a bit more, but like and it's hard to define professional, like because then the scene was really new. There was a few comedians in the 90s doing something, but like I didn't hear about them anywhere. Like it wasn't in my town and it wasn't on TV or anything. So
okay.
There was no basic stand up scene. But then like in the turn of the millennium, There started to be some, we called them clubs in Finland, but Finland has to have like a comedy club that has only comedy, but like regular nights, you know, in a theater or a.
And why did it start at the turn of the millennium? What was it that kicked off?
It was just like enough people who kind of started it, basically comedians started to run a show and then like some producers and so it kind of. Kind of just, I don't know what caused it, but I think it's been kind of on a similar schedule in lots of countries. Like there's so many countries that didn't have stand up comedy like 20 years ago, but now they do.
Okay,
and Finland was one of them. And
so was it a pretty revolutionary act to try and become a comedian in Finland? When the scene was beginning?
Yeah. Like I had no idea that that's a job. Like that's like a profession that you could tell jokes to a mic. Like because I didn't like I saw Seinfeld. That's the only reference I had when I was like, well, before I did my first gig almost. So like then I saw the Finnish guys do it for a few months when they started in my hometown, like a monthly night, and I was like, this is great. This is the best thing ever, and I was like, I have to try this. But there was no like I didn't realize that you could actually make a living doing that. Like I was always really into jokes and humor, and I thought you have to have a sketch, like TV show with sketchy. Because that's like Finnish TV was full of sketch shows, all the UK sketch shows and all the Finnish sketch shows, and I was watching those a lot, and I thought that's comedy, like because there was no stand up.
Just to get a little bit more cultural context, what is a Finnish sketch show? Similar to a British sketch show?
Yeah.
Are there similar senses of humor broadly? I know that's an impossible kind of question.
Yeah, it's like I think Finnish has kind of a unique, but like there were so many shows, but I think the most popular ones in Finland, they just had like really silly characters, like the fast show or something repetitive kind of silly characters.
Catchphrase.
Yeah,
catchphrase. Like what's the biggest catchphrase character in Finland?
It's hard to say what's the biggest one, but like this one kind of annoying neighbor guy, everybody, like he always answers the door like with no shirt.
Okay.
It's like and says the name of the other guy. It's like, yeah, that's one of the
okay.
We always remember, but it's the catchphrases are impossible to translate anyway.
Okay.
Because Finnish is a weird language. But yeah, like, and there were other types of sketch shows, like not all were like repetitive, but it was like a big thing in the 90s was like sketch comedy in Finland. It was like really big, and then like people did funny songs and impersonation and stuff, but there was no like
joke based.
Yeah, like comedy. Like stand up, like basically that just like one guy on the microphone, like that didn't like. I'm sure that like, I know that there were people who did it like for like corporations and like. Something like in bars randomly, but it wasn't a thing. But then when I started it, and then like almost a year later, I was like, okay, this is now my job, I guess. So I quit studying quite soon. And
what were you studying?
Physics.
Okay.
In the university, physics and chemistry and biology and astronomy and mathematics and stuff like that. So and I didn't really ever believe that I was going to be a physics teacher, even though that's what I was kind of.
Sure, you were doing it because it was something to do?
Yeah, it was just, I was, I was really, like, good at it, at least in, like, high school. And
I should explain for the benefit of the listener, occasionally you can hear ice clinking. Ismo is not wearing bells and any kind of traditional Finnish costume.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is really convenient, the ice. Let me just have a small sip too. But yeah, so physics and like I just got into university right away, like with like I didn't have to like apply or anything. I just had good papers from high school, and I thought, yeah, sure, it's kind of
okay.
I'm just gonna go to the university because then you can, when you're in, you can study whatever. And then I studied like philosophy, and like I was just trying to like kind of figure out the meaning of life or something. But
okay.
I wasn't really into like, oh, I'm into physics a lot. It was kind of interesting, but I wanted to be a like a metal musician or
okay, or
something, or like a writer. I was always thinking I want to write. Like I really admired like authors, but I'm way too ADHD to write a book.
Okay, sure.
But I was kind of wanted to do something creative, and I was into jokes a lot. But I didn't realize that jokes, there is actual, like you could make a living with jokes. Like that didn't cross my mind.
And when was the first time that it crossed your mind?
Well, I think the second ever gig I did in Finland. After the gig, we had just, no, I think we still had Marks. It was Euros. We just got Euros, like, so somebody, after the gig, I was like, oh, I did like a second gig I did. They were backstage and the comedians were like, okay, here's a 120 euros. And I was like, what? Because back then it was just like we sold tickets, 10 euro a ticket, and it like then we just split the money. And like kind of...
So that on your second gig to get 120 euros, that, I think the equivalent is like 100, well, I mean, it'll be different now, but call it like, £100.
Yeah, almost £100.
On your second gig, that's unheard of in the UK. That's like 3 years away.
Yeah, that's like, and because like that, but that's not, you can't do that every night. That was one monthly night, and the room was like 200, 300, just a student bar,
sure,
or something. It's a big room, but it was once a month.
The good news is it's 120 euros. The bad news is it's the only gig.
Oh, yeah. Literally. The year 2002, I did one gig a month.
Okay,
so,
okay.
And I did my 13th gig on the exact day, the same, the next year. So I actually did one gig a month for the first year. But then after that, it exploded. And then I started to do other cities and stuff. But yeah, it was... but like that was the only stand-up show in the city, and that was once a month.
Okay. And, which city are we talking?
Jyväskylä. It's called. It's a Finnish name.
Okay.
and
what was it about you that was funny on your first and second gig? What do you think? What were you getting laughs from? Was it the material? Was it your personality? Was it your confidence? Your worldview? What was the first thing that you thought? Hang on, something about this is working.
All of the above, I think. Like it was just like the rhythm and the content. Like my stuff was really different, I guess. Like when I started, it was even more surreal. Like it was like I still kind of do absurd but yet logical stuff. But that was, I was even more like I took a subject and then it just like went with it. It's too weird. Like I had this, like on my maybe second or third, like I had this long thing about like kids raised by wolves, and like I was just like, so how are the wolves as parents, and would they know about this? And it was just like, it was like a 10-minute bit about that, and I had no idea how to tell it anymore.
But that was like your first.
Well, that was like my third, like
one of your first sex.
And actually, that's also the one thing. We did one gig a month, and the audience was mainly the same. So we kind of wrote a new set every day. We just did like a new 20-minute set every month, basically, almost. Like, okay. Sometimes we like used a few of the old bits, but we'd kind of tried to... Like,
and where would you practice that set?
Nowhere.
Like, in your room? Would you say it out loud?
Yeah,
you try
or maybe,
it?
Like, have some friends over and, like, hello.
Okay.
But it was kind of the
even
opposite.
Learning 20 minutes if you don't know that it's funny or you don't know
yeah.
which bits work.
Yeah.
You just have to trust that
oh,
it
yeah.
hangs together.
Yeah, it was kind of it was the opposite of like when you start comedy now in Finland or you start here or America where there's like a longer scene, there's open mics and there were, but that was just the like, and like also the thing is like, there was like an open mic spot. That's what I did first. Like I did like a open mic in the, like, there was like four comedians and then one like open mic.
You did your one open mic, next and then, gig, the next gig.
Like, yeah, the next one, like, yeah, you can do it. And then I thought it's going to be an open mic, but we invited you, so yes.
So if you had bombed at your first open mic, how long would it have been before they let you do a second open mic? Like,
I have no idea. They hadn't thought it through. They just started. And I think the show, like, before me, the open mic did like 30 minutes or something. And then they were like, I think we have to put a time limit to the open mic. And they just figured that out at some point. And it was just like trial and error, because they had just started the club like 5 months before that or something. I think I went to see it four times, and the fifth time I went to do it. Okay. I think the thing that really encouraged me was that, like, the open mic, it was really important, because I went and saw them, and they were, like, of course, those guys still also just started, but they were pretty good. Like, they were actually good, and they did good sets, but then they had the open mic section, which normally was kind of bad.
Yeah.
And after seeing a few of those, then I, like, got the courage that I will do better than that guy.
Yes.
Like, I will do better than that guy, so...
And were you writing things down in a notebook? Were you typing on a laptop? Were you wandering around your house when you first?
Definitely notebook. I'm sure you can find a picture somewhere online. I took this picture with my like my old notebooks, like a huge pile. We've been using that in posters and stuff, like a huge pile of. Now I've been writing with phone, of course, and stuff, but. I did like 20 notebooks full of jokes.
And how many pages are you getting? Because one of the things about your jokes is they're very lean. They have a really good economy. And you are frequently changing the angle. It's like there's a paradigm shift every line. You know, that's why the material is so, it's kind of dense, it's lean. Everything about it is funny and necessary and a different worldview. So... In the early days of writing, when you write 10 pages, how many jokes does that boil down to? Is that 10 pages of funny stuff, or is it 10 pages and inside it you find one thing, you're like, that's the line?
I think it was like notes, like definitely like one sentence, one word, like, okay, here's a... And I just wrote down every idea I had, and I still do. Like, and it's maybe a third... That I even kind of, after reading the notebook afterwards, like, okay, that could actually work on stage. Like,
okay.
And then there's like lots of waste there. And I sometimes even think of it as like mining, like go to through my old notes and try to kind of mine gems.
That's a good analogy, because that suggests there'll be hard work and not everything is good.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of it is crap, but you just need one little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. And then like, I go through my old notes sometimes to kind of, when I have new bits, and I go through the old notes to try to find if there's something that would fit and like I could combine.
Okay.
And then some notes I just made like 5 years ago, and then I looked at them and, now I get it. Now I got my own. And so I've been really kind of neurotic that I have to write everything down.
Okay.
I just recently lost, I have had a piece of paper, because I was somewhere where I didn't have my phone, so I had wrote a few jokes to a paper, and I lost the paper, and I was like,
okay.
So, I always write everything down, and all the other comedians in Finland, they were always giving me shite about, like, because we were like drinking in a bar and I had my notebook open.
Yeah.
And they were like, you're stealing our joke. No, I'm not. I'm just writing, like, I have ideas every time, and I'm not asleep. I have ideas and I have to write them down. And I'm not taking your ideas. I'm just having
And do you think on that subject of having ideas all the time, do you think that everybody in the world has ideas all the time, but you bother writing them down? Or do you think that you have more or different ideas to other people?
I think everybody has funny ideas, like probably every day. But maybe, of course, there's people who would never have anything, a funny thought in their head, but I'm sure. But like, I think everybody has like, hey, that's kind of a, why do they do that? Or like, I think everybody has those, and they talk them out loud to people and they just think. But I think the difference between a non-comedian and a comedian is that we actually try to catch them and write them down. And and use them for something. But I'm sure everybody has those sometimes. But I'm sure that, of course, we have more of them because we kind of trying to develop that part of us a bit more. So, of course, I think we have more. But still, I think comedians often still need other people to kind of point out that, well, that's a joke also. And like, oh, yeah, I was just going on about, like, a train ticket.
This comes up a little bit on this show that... Yeah. The kindest thing one comedian can do for another is say, hey, that thing you just said, are you doing stuff about that?
Yeah.
And you go, no. Well, that's funny. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, that's the most useful
thing.
Yeah,
yeah, that is, yeah, that's definitely a thing. And like, my wife, she's really good at that. Like, she points that out. From, like, she's not a comedian, but, like, she's really funny and she has really good insight and she helps me a lot with, like, if I have joke ideas, I always, like, most times she's the first one to hear about them. And she's really good at, like, kind of, like, saying that, forget about that. But then I'm always angry when she's like, oh, that's not funny. And then
that's
a channel. There is a challenge. And,
yes.
And then sometimes she's also good at, like, when I, like, okay, this is a really funny idea. And then she's like, she kind of can help me to see the bigger picture. Okay, so that could be part of a theme or something like that. Like,
okay.
I don't know. I had just like one, like, just yesterday I had an idea about smelling your armpits. Like, okay. When you, like, smell and then you realize it's not you, but then, like, a guy next to you, like, oh shit, is it me? And then it kind of cascades. Or and then we're talking with her on the phone about that, and she was like, hey, you can do it goes on, and then we kind of thought that, like, it could be like, hey, what other, like, snowball effect you can start with crowds, like looking up. And then like,
I see what you mean. So she could give you the insight that you could actually take that observation and give you a fresh direction in order to, like, take it somewhere else.
Like, what's the category that observation lays into? Like, what's the word for that? Like, the umbrella term or something.
Yes,
like,
okay,
that.
Yeah.
But, like, sometimes. Like, of course, like, I'm responsible of 95% of my stuff, but I would say my wife gives me, like, really good points here and there.
Yes.
So, yeah, so she's, I would say, definitely a part of the team.
Are you quite scientific about your writing? Are you quite, I suppose scientific's the wrong word, but, like, methodological? Like, do you kind of go, okay, this joke is one of those sorts of jokes, and then my next joke has to be a different type of joke to the previous one?
When I'm, like, constructing a set,
yeah.
You mean? Not really that much. I kind of try to find links. And then I kind of try to, like, when I'm constructing a set, my two ideas have been, like, try to link everything together a bit logically. So it's not just like, okay, and the next subject, like, but it has kind of some link that you can actually kind of smoothly go into the next one and don't start with sex stuff. Basically.
That's it. That's the rules.
That's basically the two rules of a set. And kind of, or like darker, like weirder stuff. Like, don't do that in the beginning, of course. Mm-hmm. Like, start with something kind of.
What's your opener at the moment in your show?
It's a surprisingly long bit. Normally, I've been opening with, like, small gags, but now it's like a long bit about trying to pronounce English. Especially the phrase "she shells."
And why is that? I mean, I suppose it's clear why you would choose that, because it establishes that you are an outsider, mm-hmm. and you are struggling with language, and it kind of prepares us for the sort of show we're going
to
get.
Yeah, and, like, I have to explain my accent. Like, yes, I have a little bit of an accent, so I always, like, I'm really conscious and self-conscious about the accents, like, sometimes too much even, and I think about it all the time. Because, like, in Finland, I don't have an accent. Like, I speak Finnish pretty well. but like, here, I always think that, like, it's kind of, like, I have to always explain the accent, I feel like, a lot. And especially in the beginning. Of course, not after the beginning, but it would be really weird for me to do, like, a 10-minute set somewhere where I don't explain that I'm from somewhere else. I'm just like
I mean, would trains. It? Would it, it's weird because that's one of those things. I think. I wonder how much that is still true, given that it's 2018. Everyone is fundamentally interconnected. Everyone is from everywhere. Maybe the rules are different now to 20 years ago, where I would think you certainly had to walk on and go, I'm from Finland, this is who I am.
Yeah.
Have you ever tried doing an international gig where you did, where you just went, I'm Ismo, here's the stuff?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure. It's not.
It would
not
feel
common.
Weird, right,
it
still.
I would feel like my in my head, people are like, what is that the character? Is he faking it? What?
Yeah, like, well, let's talk about that. It's such your persona, which I suppose, do you feel like you have a persona or is it just you?
I think it's pretty close, but it's, of course, you're different on stage than off stage, but
okay.
It's pretty much me, but it's, yeah, of course, it's like different, but it's hard to say.
And do you consider yourself, do you think that we think you're a weirdo?
Not necessarily a weirdo, but like just like what. Like, where is he from? Like, it's not obvious. Like,
yeah,
people don't hear Finnish accents a lot here, or
sure.
Especially in America, where I'm mostly. And it's, yeah, so I think you have to kind of explain it then. And also, people do characters, like comedians sometimes. And I've had gigs where some British guy was pretending to be a German guy, and then after he mimed. So it's like,
how do you cope with that? Is it harder to establish who
like,
you are?
I'm like really from there. it was a weird situation. That happened maybe once, or so. But like sometimes in the same bill there can be somebody who's doing a character like Borat or something
kind
of type, and then it's me who's not doing a character, but. And then now I've been doing a joke about like people thinking of me as a character, like that's a bit now.
Yeah.
But
I think it's I could also imagine a comedian from Finland working in English in a show over here who we felt was more of a usual kind of person, a usual kind of a character. Like there is a thing you do with your voice which is kind of tangentially related to your accent. But you've done it a few times here, just talking to me, where you kind of you have a kind of a little kind of sound. Do you know what I mean? Like a little confused guy who is happy to be confused.
Oh yeah.
Is that do you see what I mean? Do you know what kind of noise or what note that I'm referring to?
Yeah. Yeah, sure. And like that is definitely
like you're not a bank manager from Finland, right?
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Like a definitely like kind of like a confused and amused observer.
Yeah.
Like just like kind of pondering. And that's basically the exact same character I do in Finland, even though I am from Finland. So that's basically, and it's not even it's almost me. Like of course I get exaggerated a bit, and that's basically the, I think that would be the point where like 80% of my stuff comes is like this amused observer who is just kind of trying to figure things out, but maybe already figured them out, but it's just kind of pointing stuff out. Like, yes. I think that, but of course there's bits that I try not to limit to any specific viewpoint, but I think that's generally the biggest viewpoint. And that's actually, like, that's one of the really important things for me is that, because people have asked me a few times, they have asked, like they're serious, like, how can you do comedy in Finland? Because your thing is to be an outsider, like, you like, to be not from here, and that's your thing. But, like, and I was, like, well, I felt like an outsider even in Finland. Like, I kind of feel, like, outside of humanity in some way. So I kind of always felt that. And my stuff is, it's just a little part of it that it's like, okay, I'm here in the UK now, or I'm in America, or in Canada, or whatever. Like, it's tiny. Like, I just have to address that in the beginning. And I have maybe a few jokes about, like, cultural differences, but I try to be careful not to do that too much, because I don't want to be the guy who is like, well, in Finland,
yes,
we do this.
So this is Ismo, and remember, you can get more of this interview. There is some extra material in the extras available exclusively to members of the Insiders Club, which you can join at comedianscomedian.com/insiders. There's about 22 minutes worth of stuff there, talking about Ismo's advice, more sort of specific advice for comics, what mistakes he made starting out in his career. And also he tells us a joke in Finnish and translates it into English. So something there for people slightly more hardcore than the casual listener, all at comedianscomedian.com/insiders, where you can also, for a small donation of £2 a month or more, you can get in touch with the private podcast just for the Insiders Club and get involved with all of the recent episodes of Comedy Critique, amongst other things. We had Matt Hudson on the show recently, and we've just done the critique episode for that very funny newer comic who's a musical act and I think is really going places. So if you'd like to hear us, a set from Matt and for the rest of us in the Insiders Club to curate, or for me to curate our joint feedback, then by all means, pop along there and sign up. It'd be great to have you on board. So a bit of tour news from me now before we get back into this conversation with Ismo. We've just put another date on in next spring's mini tour. It's in the Arts Centre in Salisbury, which is just a fantastic venue. I can't wait to get back there. That is on the 13th of March. All of the tour dates at comedianscomedian.com/tour. For my show End Of, which did really well at Edinburgh last year. It was called a comedy masterclass, which is very satisfying and feels quite on brand. You know as well as I do that there's no such thing as a review. So instead, maybe you would like to come and see it for the simple reason that you're excited about the podcast and you'd like to, if you haven't already, and I know a good few of you have, if you haven't already seen me do stand-up, then come along and see me in person. It should be a lot of fun. And also, if you're wavering and you're thinking, how good is this guy? We know he can listen, but can he also speak? Then you can hear one of my stand-up albums currently, at time of recording. Currently, the comedy album of mine, Compared to What, is available in audio form only on the podcast feed. So scroll down the podcast feed on your device and you'll be able to find Compared to What, which is a stand-up comedy special that I performed in Edinburgh in 2016 and toured in 2017. And if you like the sound of that, then this show is 2 whole years better. So all your tickets for End Of at comedianscomedian.com/tour. They are entirely in the south of England at the moment because I am having a new baby. Update there in the post amble. Speak to you about that after the conclusion of the episode. That's everything, I think. I've had some really lovely correspondence from people I'm still yet to get back to. And you can email me info@comedianscomedian.com or tweet me @comcompod and tell me who you'd like to see on the show. And send me nice messages. People have been doing that. It's been very satisfying recently. Also, of course, you can join the Facebook group. So that's the Comedians Comedian Podcast Facebook group, available exactly where you'd expect to find it. And do take your time to answer the introductory questions there. We keep it, I run it as a pretty tight ship, which I think really works because there's no spammers in there. It's all dedicated comedy fans. And there's some really nice treatment of each other. It's a really nice corner of the internet, so if you fancy it, join up there. There's lots of people in there now, and we all seem to be getting along famously at the moment. So that's all of the things I need to tell you just now. Oh, Patton Oswalt's coming to London. I don't have the date on me, and I don't think I can even go to that because I'm going to a wedding. But it's sometime middle of next year, maybe early summer next year, Patton Oswalt is coming to London. So if you're a fan of Patton Oswalt, as I certainly am, jump on and check that out. I put a link to that in the Facebook group. Okay, that'll do for me for now. Let's get back to this conversation with Ismo.
I just want to kind of pick on that term. You feel like an outsider to humanity. Now that's, you know, that's kind of like a, I'm interested in how much that is a psychological condition, like in your upbringing. Did you feel like an outsider, or is it like quite a comfortable position to feel like, oh, I'm simply looking at things in a different way?
Well, yeah, I often it's comfortable, but like, of course, it's like as a kid, I suppose, like it was like you, everybody tried to fit in at least one group of like, okay, these are the metalheads and these are the nerds and these are the athlete guys. And like you try to fit to some group, but I never could fit into any group.
And you tried?
Like, I kind of tried, definitely, a little bit, but I didn't really commit. Because, like,
Were you rejected, or did you just simply not try hard enough?
Well, yeah, I think it was kind of voluntary that I couldn't, like, I was like, that's not me. Like, I don't want to bend enough to kind of fit that group. And, like, I wasn't lonely as a kid or anything, but I was kind of... But I didn't feel to, like, belonged in anything, like, really. And because I felt that if you belong, I kind of realized that, I think, quite soon, that if you belong to a group, you are always faking it. Like, nobody actually belongs to any group. Like, everybody is special anyway or weird. Like, you always have to kind of forget about 70% of what you are if you want to be really like a punk rocker 100% or something. So
that's a really interesting point. I totally agree with that.
Yeah, like everybody is faking it a bit anyway. So, and I kind of didn't want to do that.
I think that suggests a certain amount of resilience in the young Ismo that although you felt a pull towards being a part of it, you weren't prepared to give up enough of yourself.
Yeah. Because
a lot of people do decide to do that, don't they?
Yeah, of course. I think most people, like, have to even, like, to, in order to survive and stuff, but, and to, like, to kind of, yeah, feel that to need to belong. But, yeah, I didn't want to be dishonest or, like, kind of, yeah. Yeah, and I've been kind of, think I've been really analytical since I was a kid, like, just, no, that's not, like, I always remember, like, arguing with my physics teacher in school and then winning the argument.
An argument about what?
Like, it's just, like, you have an error in the equation.
In the equation.
Yeah, and then, like, no, and then the whole class was like, Ismo, shut up. And then it's like, oh, yeah, there is error.
So that
was like, oh, yeah.
And was there any kind of group of other kids who didn't throw themselves into a group?
I'm sure. Yeah, yeah.
But didn't hang out together.
Yeah, I think we did. I think we kind of did. And then, like, there was some people who were kind of in a group. Like, yeah, yeah. There were some that just, like, happened to be geographically available, and we hung out with, like, so.
is that socialization, is that reflected in your comedy community? Like, are you an out? Do you feel like an outsider within the world of comedy?
Yeah, to an extent, definitely. I when I started comedy, I was so blown away by the whole thing. Like, it was so, like, nothing I've ever, like, I did, like, I was in a, like, amateur theater group in the university, and we did a couple of plays, and that was kind of, then I belonged to that a little bit. I think I belonged to the group, like, a little bit, not 100%, but, like, kind of, that was one group I belonged a little bit to, I felt. But then I started stand-up quite soon after that, and then I thought, okay, now there's a group I belong with, the comedians. Like, this is a group. I kind of hung out with just the comedians for, like, a few years. But still, I never really, like, I think there was kind of a, because I was so into comedy. Like, and when we started, we talked about jokes. Like, we went to lunch and talked about jokes all the time. But then at some point, the other comics were like, let's talk about something else for a while. And then I'm like, no, I don't want to talk about, like, how's your life. No, I don't give a, I just want to talk about the jokes. And then that kind of, like, I was so into comedy. Like, I'm way more interested in jokes than in people.
That is a very interesting admission. Okay.
Yeah, kind of. I have to admit. And that might be one of the reasons that I write a lot and, like, doing quite well, but there is kind of sort of a price for that, of course. Like, definitely I remember that. And also in Finland, I became quite successful really soon. And of course that can cause a little competition and stuff like that, even though the comedians are still, like, great. But I am I just want to talk about the material and jokes and stuff like that. And then at some point, there was kind of like, okay, it's more, tonight, no talk of comedy.
And then you go home.
Yeah, it's like almost like, yeah, well, what do we do with sports? I don't follow sport. Like, well,
do you see that as a failing in your personality, or are you happy to just go, no, I prefer jokes to people. That's just how I am.
Well, like 90% of the time, I'm okay with that. But of course, sometimes I feel like I should care. Like, and of course, excluding my wife, like, I really love her, and she's and
but fortunately, she likes jokes.
Yeah. Well, that helps a lot, of course. But and of course, there's other people in my life who are important and stuff. But it's still kind of like exaggeration thing. But I definitely, it's like when sitting and talking or having beers or something, like I, because I don't talk about I tried that, like talk about politics and stuff, but then I don't care about that either. And why did you try?
On stage, you mean? You write material.
Well, even on stage at some point, a little bit, like 10 years ago or something, or even more. Because I was like, I was into comedians that time. Like, I was like, oh, Bill Hicks and whatever. Sure. And I'm so bored of political comedy. I just don't. I gave up that. Like, I just realized that it's basically you just basically have to purposefully misunderstand the other side and make yourself stupid on delivery. Like, it's kind of, and also I don't follow politics even outside comedy. Like, I just gave up. I was kind of deep into it, and almost like I looked into like conspiracies and whatever stuff, and I was like really trying to save the world and figure it out. But then I just kind of stopped, and oh, it felt so good to stop. So, yeah.
What other types of comedy do you like? Do you particularly watch comedy that is like the kind of comedy you make? Do you like, you know, are your favorites, are you a kind of Mitch Hedberg?
Kind of like annoying that he hasn't put out a new album.
Yeah, lazy.
Oh yeah, but so yeah, definitely I really like jokes, and like I'm not like a one-liner guy, but I'm sometimes almost. But I I don't know what's. It's hard to say like a comedian who is like would be really close to me. Like hard to find somebody that I would. But I definitely like. I prefer like joke guys to story guys, definitely. Sure. Like or like opinion guys or like rants and stuff. Like, but of course they can be like. I don't know. It depends on the comedian. It just has to be something new, like a good insight in every joke. If the premise and the point of the joke is that something I've heard before, that's. I think it's awful. Like, you have to have like a new insight. Like, otherwise, just like use some other joke. Like, it's kind of like this. It's kind of weird that sometimes comedians do long bits about something that everybody knows the outcome, and it's kind of there's nothing surprising or nothing new about it. It's just like a little bit of new way of saying.
And why do you think they do that?
Well, it works, especially if they're popular, their fans love it. And sometimes comedians who get too popular, it's really hard to look at their specials because it's just, they're just talking to their fans and they love everything. And sometimes when I watch a special, I think that if that guy was unknown and he was doing that set at a club just as a guy, it wouldn't go that well, like, because it's, I think some get lazy, not all, of course, but like sometimes it's like, I'm really picky when watching comedy. I'm so picky that I feel kind of bad about it, but like, I'm really like, and I have watched it a lot, and I'm really like, next, like kind of, yeah. I'm always try to be supportive, and I never like dismiss anything really, but there's so many specials. I only watch like the first 10 minutes, and of course live comedy. Sometimes it's hard to get myself to go see a show, because then if it's not good, then it's like awful.
It's so awful. Yeah.
And my wife is even worse. Like, I sometimes like, hey, let's go see a comedian, and then like, but if it's bad, it's like it's so like she can't handle it. Like, she wants to run away. And it's kind of, and then the most scary is like if they sit me in the front row or something, when, because I know I'm a bad audience member. Because even if I like it, which I often do, I often like comedy. I really love comedy. Even then, I almost never laugh. I just like I'm just, oh yeah, that's a good one. But so I always try to hide behind the sound desk or somewhere. So because comedians, of course, if they, especially if they know me, they like, oh, check that is more laughing. No, I'm never laughing.
No, I'm not.
Yeah, but I still like it.
You mentioned earlier some aspect of your comedy or your angle on how you find humor is to find, what was the phrase you used? You said it's kind of absurdist, but
logical. I think I just got a good review on the first day here.
Okay.
And I think that put it really well. It was like something like, have to read it again, but like absurdist, but ultimately logical or something.
Yes.
And then like an outsider observing. I think that was, well, something like that.
It reminds me of, do you know the Far Side cartoons?
Yeah.
Gary Larson, those little one picture cartoons. The one that you made me think of is there is a guy on the beach and he's looking down, and on the beach next to him is a goldfish bowl on a skateboard, and the goldfish is driving around on the beach, you know, because it's like a completely bewildering thing. But it makes sense because we have boats that go in the sea. And the goldfish has a little bowl and he comes out of the sea on his skateboard and drives around. You know, it's like one of those ones where you look at it, you instantly go, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That logic makes sense. You know, you're not an absurdist in the sense of it's just, it's crazy.
Yeah, definitely. That's definitely a thing that it has to make sense in some way, but in a completely, hopefully, a completely new way that nobody thought before.
Can you think of a single joke concept of yours that you think really encapsulates?
Well, one thing, actually, I was just thinking yesterday, like, to do more about, it's like, finding opposites that don't exist.
Come on.
Like, it can just start with like a word, like I was just thinking that this was just an idea I wrote down yesterday. Like, what would be like a word that begins with like disbelief. Disbelief.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's belief.
Yeah.
Which is the opposite of disbelief. And then, like, what other? Like, disheartening. But is there heartening?
Yeah, there sort of is, but it's kind of grammatically wrong, but people do use it. Yeah, yeah.
And then but then, like, just go, like, somewhere, like, distinguished. And then it's
tinguished.
And then, like, okay, no, he's a tinguished gentleman. He's not, he's not that distinguished. So, like, kind of finding opposites that, like, even starting with the word, or then, of course, I find lots of opposites in my, things like that people, okay, people say this, but why don't they say this? Like, kind of.
Okay.
And I think that's definitely one that's really logical, but it's absurd, kind of.
Yes.
So,
and you must feel a certain amount of relish there. That's like, oh, that's the beginning of a thread.
Yeah.
And now I get to, sit down, walk around, try and think of more of them, sit in your room on your phone.
Yeah.
What does that look like? How are you going to unpack that? What sorts of things from that will you pull out? And how will you select which ones for the routine?
It's kind of weird that I am kind of analytical, but I still go with kind of the flow a lot. So I'm disorganized in that way. not that organized, actually. When I wrote that, I wrote a few, I kind of thought about a few of words that begin with this, and then I was kind of, but then I just forgot it. And now I think when I'm doing if I do a new material show at some point, then before that, that's always the day, of the new material night. Like, oh, then I'm trying to find everything and put it together in like kind of a panic. And
so maybe your obsession covers your lack of organization.
Yeah,
it makes up for it.
Yeah, and I like try to be organized in some way, but not in the way that like now I'm working on this bit for 2 hours. Like normally it's just like a minute, and I write it down, and then I happen to think of it next day. And sometimes I get into the flow and kind of do some research and type more, but it's kind of rare. It sometimes just happens. And
when you say do some research, what sort of
thing like finding words or finding like sure. just Googling stuff, like mm-hmm. just like okay.
I find that hell. That is the biggest distraction. It's yeah. like if I always think to myself, if I'm writing a bit and I'm like, what's another word for clam? I always have to think, I've got to come back to it later. Because if I Google synonyms for clam, I can't, I'll just, oh, and there's another one, and I'll follow another track, and yeah. then the writing will be lost forever.
yeah. You know? Yeah, that's true. Like, yeah, distractions can really take you. And it's kind of, I've always wondered this, because like, I write a lot of comment. Like, I write, like, I always, in Finland, I had the reputation that I'm the guy who writes, like, way more than anybody else. Like I in Finland, I think I've put out like 4 DVDs, and I think I've done 7 2-hour shows with different material in Finland. So
7 2-hour shows.
Yeah.
Wow.
So.
And what kind of, you say you're famous in Finland? What kind of venue size are you playing on tour?
Well, like the biggest they have in cities, basically, like a 500 to 1200, okay. like a theater, like in a, there's lots of like cities in Finland, like okay. none of them are like really big. Helsinki is kind of big, but it's still, and now I'm actually doing this October, first time I'm doing like an ice hockey arena, which is like 6,000. So
in Helsinki?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. But yeah, I've done a few, couple of like 2,000 people gigs. And okay. So,
and how long will you do in a 6,000? Is that a 2-hour show or yeah, a support like act or a...
Yeah, no. Normally, I don't have a support act. I just do like 45 minutes. Then there's like a break, and then I do like about almost an hour. The second half is a bit longer.
Okay.
So it's like 2 hours with the break sometimes. Okay. So that's kind of the and well, we can. This takes me to another thing. But in Finland, I also do some songs. Some at the end normally, like okay. I do like parody songs, like just silly songs. And I with the big shows, I sometimes do them with the band. I actually have a band
yeah.
on stage, and we do songs.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, and
but what kind of like I'm imagining now a metal band, but maybe just a regular
yeah,
band.
No, no, just yeah, yeah. They are like actually really good, really professional musicians, and I'm not. And it's kind of a funny contrast.
Can you sing?
Yeah, I can okay. hold a tune. So okay. it's all right, but. But
and when you say parody songs, do you mean like
yeah.
pop songs that you change the words to?
Yeah, yeah.
And now there's something about the way you're saying that, like, yeah. Like, are you...
Well, yeah. It's like I never really did that in English. I've only been doing that in Finnish. And they are all, like, they are like untranslatable. It's such a Finnish thing. Like, I did a few of them in English at, like years ago, but then I kind of... I don't think I'm going to do parody songs in English ever. I'm pretty sure.
Because?
I haven't been able to do it in the same way. And also it's been done in English way yep. more. So even well, though my things are completely different and the Finnish ones are like, they are not just silly songs. I'm like, it feels so weird to try to explain them in English, but they are actually songs that they have actual really good punchlines every like 10 seconds almost, like they are
okay.
actually
well,
people,
I was,
people actually laugh out loud. It's not just like, oh, it's a kind of a funny
I show. Was gonna say a parody song doesn't seem like the sort of thing that you would want to watch. You seem like you have high standards of comedy, and I think certainly in the UK when someone does a parody song or like a pop song and changes the words, it's easy to imagine the non-singing comedians in the room going, okay,
yeah,
you know this again. Like yeah. you're fighting for your idea here. These are like proper big punchline songs.
Yeah, they are like full of actual jokes. And then like that's why the songs I like. It's very rare to come up with a new song.
Yeah,
like I write like 100 jokes in a year or something, or way more. I don't know. I may or less. I don't. I never count them. But look, maybe 100 that I can use, but I still, but songs, it can be like one or two, or, and now it's more like kind of these mashups mostly. Like I have a theme. Now actually the new one in Finland, I really love it, but it's just like a theme, like thing I'm really annoyed about. And then I just have like 20 songs, like few sentences of a song, just everything fits to
okay.
that.
Okay.
And it's really...
I'm
really,
so gutted we can't translate it and find out what that stuff is.
Well, I actually that bit I could maybe do in English, but it was just like, well, the idea is like Like when there's like a construction in like a hotel, yeah. Or like you're like coming from a gig and late and you're really like, I'm gonna, and then like 6 a.m. they start drilling or something, and then I just do like so many songs that kind of mention some sound, or like I change it a little bit, so it's always like, can you hear me? Or like, and it's just, and all the construction terms, and it's just, I've been writing that song for like a year.
Okay.
And now
okay.
It's like 5 minutes long, and it's, or even longer. But I've never thought how it would go in English, but it really hits the spot in Finnish, because it's just.
What's your, when you do your tour, your ice hockey arena tour, not tour, ice hockey arena show.
Yeah. That's like a tour that ends there. So that's like a
tour. That, so that tour show, what's in Finnish? What's the first joke? Because given that you have no, you don't need to set up the English, the language, the outsider.
The tour, I just did it. Actually, this summer, it's a tour that I've been doing in Finland now for, like, well, it's going to be a year after October, but I live in America now, so I just go there for, like...
Where in America?
L.A.
Okay.
So, nice weather.
Are you the only Finnish comic in L.A.?
I'm pretty sure.
If another one turns up... Are you the biggest comic in Finland?
Well, depends on, like, if you... Like, there's another guy who's really big, but he doesn't do anything in English. But okay. He's okay. Really big in Finland, but, like... He's done ice hockey arena before me, so so in that case I'm.
But sure he doesn't live in LA.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So.
And do you have dreams of breaking into movies, being the Finnish guy in the movies?
Sure. Yeah. Like I'm open to like I'm not going to auditions or I'm not actively pursuing it, but I'm kind of trusting that maybe someday if it's meant to be, I didn't plan moving to America. Like, I never planned it. It's just that they had this competition. They tried to find international comedians, and they found me in Finland. And I was like, sure, I can come. And then I won it. And then I'm like, okay, I guess I'll move here. Like, I wasn't planning anything. And, like, it's I've been kind of trusting that things, like, if you just do good shows, things will happen. And then, like, just, like, when opportunity comes, you take it. Like, it's kind of a... So I haven't, of course, when I started comedy, that was one of my big decisions in life, like to actually make a phone call that I want to do the open mic next week. Can I do it? Like that's basically the only thing I ever did. Because then after that, my phone started ringing and it just kept moving along. So like almost like that in Finland, like it just, I did the first gig and then everything was obvious. Of course I'm going to do a second gig and then, okay, let's go to another city and whatever. And then, okay, TV. Yeah, sure. I can do it. And it's, so it kind of just kept going. And now it seems that the American thing is also, it's just kind of been going pretty well. And UK, of course, like I did way more stuff here earlier, but then, now I've been more in America, but now I'm back in the fringe. I've done this a few times before. But,
I saw your show here, was it 2 years ago?
Yeah, I think three.
3 years ago, okay.
Yeah,
you were in the Pleasance Dome, I think.
Yeah, I'm there also now.
Yeah.
In a slightly bigger room. But yeah.
And is it humbling? How does it feel doing an arena back home, living in LA, and then coming to Edinburgh and playing a 100-seater?
Which is super hot.
It's not, you know, not being, there isn't a car waiting to take you to the gig and, you know, there's no security guys that are like, where is most guys? His friend's guy.
Well, actually, that is, I will try to do this as a joke at some point, but it, actually, that's funny you mentioned security. There's no security. Well, there is security guys against me.
Is that right?
Like, when I go backstage on my venue, they search my bag for alcohol. So it's very humbling, yeah.
How do you cope with that? Do you feel good about it?
It's great. And I like, of course, everything. Like, when I started to do comedy in English outside of Finland, I knew that I'm starting from scratch.
When things go wrong, when you have tough audiences or tough shows, do you have tough crowds anymore? Like, let's talk, I mean, maybe not in Finland, but over here, where maybe a different amount of people are going to get your sense of humour or not, your profile is not so great, you will have a bigger percentage of people taking a risk on something they heard about, rather than...
Yeah.
Is my fans.
Oh, yeah. Of course, like, and it can happen, like, here, like, if the crowd is really small, it's always tough, like, when you do an hour for, like, 20 people, it's not easy, and so, yeah, that's always... it can be tough, but normally, I haven't had any like really tough crowds lately. But of course, when I left Finland and I went to America or come here or whatever, like of course I understood that like I'm just a new guy, like some guy who's trying to like I didn't have to start from scratch, luckily completely, but. But all, like when I first came to UK like 2005, I definitely started from scratch. Like did a few open mics in some like smallest possible clubs and stuff. So yeah, that was really, and that's what I knew it's gonna be and stuff. But yeah, I never, it's kind of, of course there's nothing surprising about, like it's not like humble, like any in Finland even, it's not. It's still like, even if I do big venues there, there's definitely no security guys, or it's just like normally I'm driving myself and I'm just like moving, carrying merchandise and whatever. So it's not like in the movies, but actually in America it's kind of great when you do a headlining, when you do like a weekend somewhere, it's they actually,
are you headlining weekends in the States?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Tell me about that. That's great. Oh, yeah,
that's great. Like,
so you've got a crowd there. I understand it, you can't headline unless your name brings audience members.
Yeah, of course, they also give comps and stuff, too, because it's so many. It's not one. It's like 6 gigs in a week. So that was kind of blowed. Like, first, I was like, really, like, how can this system work? Like, you either give, like, one spot, like, one Tuesday, and there's 200 people on Tuesday, so I guess that's good. Okay, we'll give you 6 gigs for a week. Well, like, the people already came on the Tuesday. Yeah. it's so weird that you have to then do 6. So, of course, I think the system works. The American system works really well. Like, because if you are a huge star, you do the 6 gigs. It's all sold out immediately, mm-hmm. and you do extra shows and whatever. But then if you're, like, just barely on that, okay, you're good enough to headline, but you don't really sell that well, they can still, like, they hand out tickets. Because they know it's going to be a good show, but they hand out like some free tickets. Like they first see
how much they can make the money on drinks.
Because the food, all the clubs serve food and drinks, and they make the most of money. So it makes sense to them, and it's kind of long term. Everybody wins because then
they build your crowd. Yeah. They come back to see you next time.
Yeah, maybe there's like 500 people who bought tickets, and then another 500 who just came to see what's going on, and then now they are hopefully fans. So it's a great system that there's comics on different levels that can do it.
Did you have to learn a particular way of dealing with hecklers, given your unusual style of performance?
In you mean English or Finnish?
But in the early days in Finland.
Like that. I think
because you're so genial and inquisitive and warm, certainly when I've seen in the UK, I find with acts who are very friendly, sometimes if they get heckled and they respond too harshly, or, you know, it's harder to fine-tune your response so that it is in keeping with your character.
That's definitely true. And I think most comedians, the worst fear when starting are hecklers. Like, what if somebody says something? What do I do? Like, I was, of course, afraid of that when I started. And that's definitely a thing I realized I can't do, like mean, really super, like, fuck you, heckler lines. I definitely can't do those. Like, and I don't want to do them. Like, most of the heckling is still positive. Like, sometimes, like, it's, like, especially in Finland, it's just somebody who's drunk, who's just, like, too happy. And he's, like, forgets that there's other people here. It's, like, that's the stereotype heckler in Finland, definitely.
Okay.
It's, like, just kind of, like, a drunk guy who's, like, trying to help. But, of course, there's some, like, can be mean people also sometimes. Mostly, like, nobody in Finland heckles when they're sober. Like, that would be, like, no, it's always super drunk people. So you can always make fun of their drunkenness. So that's kind of... that's, I think that, like, I like over the years, I kind of stumbled by accidentally into some funny heckler lines, and I've been using them ever since. And just like, just saying something, ah, oh, it's funny, and then kind of, but like, never like super mean. And in English, I actually, this I did on one gig, and then I've been doing kind of ever since when somebody like heckles, like, it's something like that. Oh yeah, you can heckle me, but I don't really speak English. Like, I won't understand. Like, I don't even know what I'm saying.
That's very disarming. That's lovely. That's a lovely status kind of switch.
That's been, and then like variations of that, and so yeah. So that's, it's never really been a problem. And also, I think when people actually realize that it's not my first language, they kind of, they think twice before heckling. So I think they heckle to me less, or maybe, I don't know. I can't compare, but
okay.
I don't really have a problem.
Are you happy?
That's a trick question. I have been trying to write a joke about this, and it's one of the things I've been thinking a lot. And I think the premise of the joke is that I hate people who publicly say that they are happy, because then they make all other people think that there's something wrong with them. The premise of the joke would be like nobody's actually happy, but some people just don't realize it. or they lie about it. Or they think that they're almost happy. So they kind of, well, I can say I'm happy now because I'm almost there. So I think it's good enough now to say it. But I don't think anybody's happy. Like, but what's the definition of happy? Like, people are okay. Like, people are like fine, that definitely. But like, the definition of happiness, it's way. And people do these kind of, when I was a kid, actually, I coined a term, I don't know if somebody else uses it, but like list happiness, or like listing, like
a list
happiness. Like, but okay, I have this, and I'm not starving, and I have this, and I have clothes, and I am happy. like you make a checklist happiness.
Yes.
So it's, people do that a lot, and they compare. And comparison happiness is one thing you compare, like, okay, there are people starving. I'm not starving. I'm happy. Like, no, you're not. It's not so. And this actually is also kind of current, because Finland was officially now the happiest country in the world.
Oh, is that right? Okay, yeah. I mean, I think of it in suicide, but is that not right?
Yeah, it's,
well, everyone
it's
left
right.
is
yeah.
really happy.
Yeah, all the sad people went. So, yeah. So, but actually, like, that's the thing. Like, the happiest country, that's kind of a thing that gets into news always. Like, Norway was, I think, last year, but okay. Now it's Finland. And they don't measure happiness at all. They have the study has absolutely nothing to do with happiness. They measure things like gross national income, and corruption, and freedoms, and like life expectancy, like things like that.
Checklist.
That's exactly the checklist. So it should be like the nicest country or something, but it shouldn't, like, they don't measure the serotonin in people's brains, or the amount of smiling or anything like that. So yeah, I think that's kind of the study kind of reflects that people, like, okay, like, you're like, you have this and this and this, so if you don't say you're happy, you're an asshole, because some people are doing like guilt happiness. That's one thing. Like, you have to, like, I guess I am, because like I know people who are doing worse. So, but I'm all right. Like, I'm really careful with using the word happiness, because it's kind of, I think it's misused a lot. But I think I'm in the place I'm meant to be, and what's kind of like, I don't know if I believe in fate, but I'm not sure if I believe in free will either. So it's kind of, I think it's interesting, and it's really like, I'm still excited about like how things changed like 2-3 years ago when I suddenly moved to America, and it's still exciting. And I'm also, I have some things there cooking that I might be doing something at some point. And so it's, it's great. And, yeah, But it's a long answer for a simple question. But yeah, I'm all right. Yeah.
Thanks, Isma.
Thanks.
So that was Ismo Laikola. Thank you so much to Ismo for coming along. Thank you to the Place Hotel on York Place in Edinburgh for their generous donation of some recording space. And thanks to the usual suspects, podcast correspondent Pete Dobbing. I've made him a correspondent there, not a consultant for once. To Nathan Wood, of course, for editing and uploading the show. And Rob Smouten for the music. If you'd like to find out more about Ismo, you can go to @IsmoComedy. On Twitter, or you can go to his website, www.ismo.fun. Isn't that sweet? It's nice to know that other people are using alternate versions to .com. What is, or is that just a Finnish one? Have I been accidentally racist? I don't think so. No, I think he's deliberately chosen that because it's .fun. So there we go. That's Ismo, and you can, if you speak Finnish, there's an incredible amount of stuff there. You've got, he's done 3 DVD specials and all sorts of stuff in Finland. Really, I really recommend you check out some of his stuff. Isn't he appealing? Isn't he a lovely? He's got such a lovely, warm voice, and his accent seems intrinsically part of him to my English ears. And he's just so much fun to watch live, and it's so much fun watching an audience be won over by the nonsense. The stuff he did in Montreal was so funny. It was all about, well, you can probably find it. I'm sure you can find it online. I won't spoil it for you, but it's to do with him flying to New Zealand and what happens to the day that you lose. But it's just one of those ones where you're listening to it going, God, that's, you know, it's a combination of, oh, I vaguely thought that. I could have said that bit. You know, that experience of when someone hits a topic and you're like, oh, damn it, I've observed that, but I never articulated it. It's a combination with Ismo of that. And just as you're thinking, oh, I've noticed that, you start thinking, and I could never have articulated it like that. So really, really good fun. Give his stuff a watch. And that's that. I'm going to have a post amble at you now in a moment. Join the Insiders Club for extra content. Go to the /tour page if you'd like to find out about the tour in the spring, my tour. But for now, that concludes the podcast. I'll speak to you next week. Thanks for listening. So here's the update. There's no update. There's no news. My wife was absolutely... It's the due date today, right now. And I'm recording this on Sunday, and we were expecting Future Girl to make an appearance. She has not done so. My wife has been absolutely convinced that she was going to arrive a week early. So we've been... I've been off work, and we've been getting ready, got my catcher's mitt on all week, and nothing. And even today, it's like, any news? I keep, you know, taking the boy out for a quick walk, coming home and going, are you in labour? No, not in labour yet. So it turns out with me, this is a thing I've learnt, 2 things I've learnt recently. One is that the nesting instinct, which we both actually experienced the first time round, and which certainly for me, I now look back, and that came out. I mentioned Compared to What earlier on. A chunk of that show is about me trying to sort of pointlessly renovate the cellar, which I sort of realised in hindsight was this weird nesting instinct. The nesting instinct this time round has asserted itself slightly differently. Apparently, there is a phase in the just about to pop mother pregnancy, at the very end of the pregnancy, pre-birth, there is a phase where people suddenly have a huge rush of energy. And my lovely and charming and funny wife used that yesterday to build a beautiful little toy Muppet theatre for our son out of a shoebox, and put a star cloth in it with fairy lights and glittering curtains and everything. It was absolutely amazing. And apparently means that Future Girl should have arrived there and then, but hasn't. Be quite good. You could sort of give birth into the little puppet theatre, and then her first cry could be some front cloth patter. What an image! But the other thing I've learned, with me not having done a gig for like 8 or 9, maybe even 10 days now, is that I am unbearable. I hadn't realised the extent to which I couldn't remember. The extent to which me going out and doing gigs is a huge part of a sort of day-to-day coping mechanism in my life. And I think this has come up in the podcast before. I forget which episode, but the way that comedy enables oneself, or any kind of creative, freelancy, keep yourself busy occupation enables one to not solve any of one's problems, because you can always get stressed about the work, whatever the work is, whether you're baking cakes or doing gigs. You can always, provided you can busy yourself, you can not resolve loads of stuff because you can always just run out the door and bake something. What I've realised, what I've remembered, having not gigged in over a week, is that I'm fucking unbearable. I am an absolute nightmare to live with. I'm tense, my knee jiggles, and it's sort of quite satisfying in that kind of mad workaholic way. You know, workaholics are the sorts of people who, when they hear, hey, you really push yourself hard, workaholics think, yes! Do you know what I mean? Yeah, proving myself, rather than, oh God, you're right, I better slow down. This is a similar sort of thing whereby, without the opportunity to run out the door, let off some steam and do a show somewhere, I'm leg jiggling my way around the house. I'm going, what should we do? Shall I mow the lawn? Shall I do this? Shall I do that? Let's thread some pasta onto a pipe cleaner. Do you know what I mean? Like, but in a way whereby my son is staring at me like, what are you doing? So let me publicly apologise to my wife for being unbearable. Sorry, mate. That's my part. For your part, hurry up and have a baby, because it's driving me mad. Hopefully, when I speak to you either next week, I'll speak to you next week. No, I'll speak to you in 2 weeks to say, hey, we had a baby a week ago. You now, this is the listener, not my wife, who I do communicate with in real life using my voice and face. And text, you know. I'm going loopy. I'm shut in. And I've been leaving the house regularly, but without gigs, I'm shut in. So you, the listener, dear listener, friend, I will, if I speak to you in a week, it'll be because she still hasn't fucking turned up. So I hope I don't speak to you for 2 weeks to tell you all about what a wonderful girl we've got. All right? That's everything. Good. Okay. Bye for now. Christ. Bye.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.